Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
It's all relative, right? I mean, is there anything really true across all cultures and times and places? Or put it another way, are there any acts that are immoral everywhere, or is it just up to the habits and practices of each society? My name is Cy Kellen. I am your host, and our topic this hour, Your Truth, My Truth, How to Understand and Refute Relativistic Thinking. 888-318-7884 is the number. If you have a question about relativism or would like some help tackling that troublesome philosophy of our time, 888-318-7884. If you think the truth is relative, whether truth in general or just morals, give us a call. If you've been talking to relativists and you want to know how to engage them, you can also give us a call on that count. Maybe a relativist has asked an argument of you or proposed an argument to you for his relativism and you need some help answering. Well, Carlo Broussard, staff apologist here at Catholic Answers and the maker of Your Truth, My Truth, How to Understand and Refute Relativistic Thinking, is with us here today. Hi, Carlo.
Hey, Cy. How are you, buddy?
I am very, very well. I'm
fantastic.
I'm looking forward to this because I do think this is the in many ways the topic of our times.
Sure, it is. It's very prevalent in our culture. We see it front and center with the whole transgender issue, the idea that rather than conforming to what is real, to reality, I make my own reality. There can be no false perception of reality because there's basically no reality to perceive, but only a reality to create. We find ourselves in our culture where we're divorcing ourselves from the objective standard of human nature.
Yeah.
And it's leading down the road where we're able to, so-called, define who we are according to our subjective desires and what we might feel, and thus leading to the practice of transforming our bodies in order to try and meet and be in harmony with those desires, subjective desires that we have. So we see relativism front and center in the whole transgender issue, as well as just with sexuality in general, that there's no inherent meaning to human sexuality that we should reverence and that we should respect, for we determine what is good and bad sexual behavior, as opposed to good and bad sexual behavior being determined by human nature and what nature ordains our sexuality toward and the intrinsic purposes of sexuality, etc. So, you know, these are some of the contemporary issues where we see relativism manifesting itself very explicitly. And that would be kind of like intellectual relativism. There's really no truth whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Pertaining to our nature, our gender, or our sexuality, etc. And then that would also carry over into moral relativism as well, because the intellectual relativism ultimately leads to moral relativism, because if there is no absolute truth whatsoever, well, then there's no absolute truth about what I ought to do, what is good, appropriate human behavior, and what is bad or inappropriate human behavior. So there's a distinction that we can make between intellectual relativism, there's no truth or no absolute truth in general, and then moral relativism, which states there's no moral absolute truths. Some philosophers call it local relativism because it localizes it to the area of morality, as opposed to just truth in general, you see. Now, they're intrinsically related. One leads to the other, but there is a distinction to be made, and I'm sure we'll be addressing these different forms of relativism throughout today's show.
Maybe you're wondering about truth. Maybe you yourself are uncertain whether some things are true and some things are false, particularly in the moral realm, but maybe just in the, as Carlo was saying, in the general realm of intellect. 888-318-7884 is the number, or to put that in spelling, 888-31-TRUTH. 888-31-TRUTH is that number. And Carlo, you know, one of my heroes, Walker Percy, he actually comes from down your way. He's from a philosopher and novelist from Louisiana. And he says this kind of thinking is apocalyptic. And I think what he means by that is that if there's nothing true, then the human person is no longer safe. That anything can be done and will be done. People, and so that you lose the kind of social cohesion that you need for people to flourish.
There has to be an objective standard that would apply to all human beings in order for us to fulfill our natural end of being social, rational animals, right? We are social beings, and in order to relate to one another in a peaceful and harmonizing way, there must be an objective standard. And in our Catholic tradition, and even just not even the Catholic tradition, but dating all the way back to Aristotle himself, there is an objective standard, namely human nature. And because we're all human beings, we all have a human nature, there's a certain order to human nature, and the good, what is good for us, given our nature as human beings, is determined by the various ends for the sake of which our natural faculties exist, and what nature orders those powers toward, the achievement of which is good for us, the frustration of which is bad, and that can be a basis or a ground that applies to all human beings, as opposed to morality being contingent upon a person's an individual's subjective judgment, which becomes arbitrary. And that's going to be reduced to might makes right. Because whenever there's a conflict in moral views of what is true, what is false, what is right, what is wrong, the only view that's going to win the day is the view that has the one who holds the view, the one that holds the view that has the most power.
Yep. So again, we're not safe then. But you know what? I don't think there's often a well-developed intellectual argument, but there's often this kind of thing. Well, Carlo, you know what? You're just not comfortable with gray areas. You're just not comfortable with the fact that the things aren't that clear.
Right. Well, just because that would be a non sequitur in philosophy.
Oh, I thought I was being so smart too, Carlo.
That just because there are some things that we might not be able to come to the knowledge of the truth about, it doesn't follow that there is no objective truth. In philosophy, we would say that's a difference. There's a difference there between epistemology, which has to do with coming to know things, our knowledge of things, and ontology, or a metaphysical aspect, which has to do with the reality of things, whether the thing is real or not. So just because we might disagree, it doesn't follow that there is no objective truth. Just because there might be some gray areas where we don't have absolute certainty about a particular behavior, a particular thing, it doesn't mean that there is no objective truth about the matter. And then, of course, we could respond and say, well, there are some things that are clear about what is good and what is bad for us as human beings. We're ordered to self-preservation. So to take our life, you know, would be not good for us. It's good for us to eat food and to drink in order for us to nourish our bodies, to continue living. We are ordered towards reproduction, right, and the continuation of the species. Our sexual powers are ordered towards certain ends, the achievement of which is good, the intentional frustration of which is bad. And then as rational beings, Sai, we're not just animals. In the philosophy world, we say we're rational animals, which means we have certain rational powers or faculties that are ordered towards certain ends. We're made to know the truth. We're made to act freely without physical coercion. We're made to love. The achievement of these things, truth, love, choosing the good, acting freely, these are good for us given our nature as human beings. The frustration of these things, Sai, if I lie to you, that's not good for you, right? You're going to be ticked off. You're not going to be a happy man.
Right.
Why? Because you're made for the truth, and to intentionally frustrate you from achieving that ultimate goal or end is not good for you. So there are some things that are clear given the order of human nature, and thus we can discern what is good, what is bad, and develop a morality, a system of morality that's objective and grounded in human nature. We call that the natural moral law.
888-318-7884 is the number. Your truth, my truth. How to understand and refute relativistic thinking is our topic this hour. If you want to challenge Carlo's idea that some things are true and some things are false, some things are good, some things are bad, we're happy to take that challenge. Or if you would just like help addressing that kind of prevailing view in our society that everything is just relative, we'd be happy to help. 888-318-7884. Give us a call. We'll be right back to take your calls on Catholic Answers Live.
you just love listening to Carlo Broussard? Did you know you can book Carlo or any of our other great speakers to speak at your parish or special event? Contact one of our seminar coordinators through the Speakers Bureau section on Catholic.com today to find out more information. It may be true for you, but not for me. How often have you heard this during a discussion with friends or family? Whether talking about faith, morality, politics, or just the basic notion of truth, so many people are captive to the notion of relativism, the belief that reality is something we decide. In his new audio presentation, Your Truth, My Truth, apologist Carlo Broussard breaks down this intellectual cancer, looking at the different kinds of relativism we regularly encounter and demonstrating how, ultimately, they collapse under the weight of their own incoherence. More importantly, Carlo makes a powerful case for the existence of objective truth, showing you how to explain to others that right and wrong are both real and universal, because it was designed that way by God. Order your copy of Your Truth, My Truth by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serpa. In Matthew 5:17, Jesus said to his disciples, "Do not think that I have come to abolish the law and the prophets. I have come not to abolish, but to fulfill." It is in the fulfilling of the law and prophets that he challenges all who hear him. He did not intend to fulfill the law by beginning with outward observance, as his fellow Jews were accustomed to expect. From this point forward, fulfillment of the law had to come from inside the person. Mere outward observance in itself would not be sufficient. Outward observance would have to reflect an inner disposition. So often he charged the scribes and Pharisees with appearing blameless on the outside, but inside being full of corruption and deceit. The kingdom of God demands much more. It demands purity of heart. Blessed are the pure of heart, he was to say, for they shall see God. To have a pure heart is to prefer nothing to him. I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Your Truth, My Truth, How to Understand and Refute Relativistic Thinking. That is our topic today. Carlo Broussard, staff apologist here at Catholic Answers, is our guest. And I did forget to mention this. Anyone who gets on the air today with Carlo is going to receive a free copy of Carlo's CD, Your Truth, My Truth, How to Understand and Refute Relativistic Thinking. So you're definitely going to want to pick up that phone and call 888-318-7884. And if you don't get on the air with them, it's just it's less than $10 on Catholic.com. You go to shop.catholic.com. And included with the CD are instructions to download the 38-page study guide.
Yeah,
come on, Carlo. Well, you're just giving that away for free?
It's a little booklet, you know, a PDF booklet that goes through the various critiques. It teaches you how to critique relativism in both its global form, or intellectual relativism, and even in its local form with regard to morality. And then it provides help on how to counter some of the arguments that relativists will give in order to substantiate their claim. So, for example, the argument from tolerance. You know, well, if you believe in absolute truth, you're being intolerant. Or how can I believe in absolute truth when there are so many different opinions out there, right? People believe so many different things. How can I know absolute truth exists? We should be able to believe whatever we want as long as we don't hurt somebody. That's one common argument that we hear out there in modern culture, that we need to be equipped to be able to sift through reasonably, mm-hmm. acknowledge maybe perhaps some of the half truth that's there, but then also be able to show where it's inconsistent as well. So these are some of the things that I go through. And then I also teach you how to defend, for example, the principle of non-contradiction, a fundamental principle of reason, something cannot be and not be in the same respect, same place and time. How you can defend that to show that that's at least one thing that's absolutely true, right? And then upon that, we can build knowledge. And then also what I was talking about earlier, Cy, the objectivity of moral truth grounded in human nature. So I in one of the chapters in the study guide, I talk about that as well.
888-318-7884 is the number. Your truth, my truth, how to understand and refute relativistic thinking is going out free to everyone who gets on the air with Carlo. And the first one will be, as far as I know anyways, John in Omaha, Nebraska, listening on KVSS. John, you are on with Carlo Broussard.
Good evening, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call. The other day, I have a son who is in college, and he was arguing with me that there is the justification for moral relativism, and okay, that he didn't believe in that there were any moral absolutes. And I was just searching for some information,
okay,
how to refute his discussion.
Sure. Well, if you're looking for some resources, John, just right off the bat, I would encourage a shameless plug here, of which Cy was just introducing, my talk, my audio CD, Your Truth, My Truth, along with the study guide. And in the study guide, I give you several ways that you can critique both intellectual relativism and moral relativism. And then there's also a great book out there, John, and the title of the book is Feet Firmly Planted in Mid-Air. It's Relativism, Feet Firmly Planted in Mid-Air by Francis Beckwith and Gregory Kokel. It's a great book that, you know, it's an exhaustive treatment of relativism and teaching you how to respond to it in all its various different forms. But I think, John, fundamentally, what you have to do is try to share with your son examples that he would intuitively already acknowledge to be a moral absolute. So you could use the example of what Hitler did in Nazi Germany in exterminating the Jews. You could use the example of slavery. This is one way. You can appeal to his moral intuition and say, hey, look, John, you know, you can say, look, son, if you really believe that moral truths and what is good, what is bad is only relative to what an individual happens to think, well, then we couldn't accuse Hitler of wrongdoing. We couldn't accuse our government of this previous slavery laws of wrongdoing. Fundamentally, if moral truth is not absolute but only relative, well, then we couldn't accuse anybody of any wrongdoing. Why? Because the individual would be the final arbiter of what is good and what is bad. So ultimately, John, You can show your son that moral relativism undermines morality completely. And that's something that's so absurd, I think even he will come to see that, well, I might be a moral relativist in my thinking, but in practice, I'm not a moral relativist. Because, John, you can just turn the tables on your son and say, well, okay, son, hypothetically, how would you feel if, you know, I would lock you up and put you in a room and starve you to death, right? I mean, that's an absurd example, but fundamentally, if moral relativism were true and you perceive that to be correct and right for you, well, then you couldn't be accused of wrongdoing, right? So you want to take the logic of moral relativism and apply it to other examples where you know he'll intuitively acknowledge to be so absurd that he must give up moral relativism. So that's one way among many that you could go about critiquing it, by showing it undermines morality completely, making it impossible to accuse another of wrongdoing. What do you think of that, John?
That sounds good. You know, I was trying to approach it from an intellectual aspect. He's in college, you know, and he still attends Mass. He's a believer. But
right.
I'm trying to approach this intellectually rather than just trying to say, well, God said so, that's the reason why.
And, John, I couldn't agree more. I think it's very important that we show them that this is something we don't need the Bible to know. Does the Bible give us absolute moral truths? Yes. Praise be Jesus Christ for that, because a lot of times we have an admixture of error. But these are things that we can come to know by the natural light of human reason. And once again, if you get the resources that I mentioned at the outset of our conversation, John, you'll see that there is a very, very strong intellectual basis for the objectivity of moral truth. So thanks for your call, John.
Thank you, John. And we'll be sending you Your Truth, My Truth, How to Understand and Refute Relativistic Thinking. I'm sure that that will be helpful. We go to Ron in Wintersville, Ohio, listening on God's Word. Is that right, Ron?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Very good.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. This must be Father Son's Day, because I was with my adult son just last week, and it's an aspect of relativism and sort of its syncretism, I guess, is that he has many friends who say, all I need is a relationship with Jesus, and well, religion is so divisive,
right?
So I don't need to be part of a church. Some actually do attend some Protestant churches, but a good number of them don't. And I wondered if there's some audio resource that would be good for him to listen to in a nice way. Obviously, these are his friends, but he wants to sort of help work with them as well.
All right. So what you're saying is that this idea of relativism seems to have in some way made its way into these particular forms of Christianity, and the argument being, because religion is so divisive, well, then I don't really need to belong to any religion, but I just need to believe in Jesus. Is that the gist of it?
Me and Jesus. Just me and Jesus.
Just me and Jesus, right? Yeah. Oh, well, first of all, here's one thought, Ron. Notice that the argument or the basis for the argument is that religions are divisive. Well, you can simply turn the tables on the individual who's making that argument and saying, well, do you believe in an absolute truth? And you mentioned that some of these folks are Christian, coming from a Christian community. Well, yes, they're going to believe in an absolute truth, namely Jesus Christ is God. Okay, well, that's a claim of objective truth. But there are others who do not believe that Jesus Christ is God. There are others who do not believe that God exists in the first place. So the very fact that these Christian individuals are making an objective claim, a claim about objective reality, Jesus is God, God exists, by its very nature constitutes a dividing line from those who do not believe that Jesus is God and who do not believe that God exists. So their argument from religion being divisive doesn't hold water, because in as much as they profess objective truths, they're constituting boundaries and dividing lines. That's just the very nature of truth itself. P, not P, right? If you say God exists, well, the contrary to that is God doesn't exist. So the minute you make a statement about objective reality, you're drawing a dividing line, you're drawing a boundary. So that's what I would say in regard to the argument from divisiveness. Now, concerning the me and Jesus thing, Ron, here's the key. Okay, me and Jesus. All right, I look at these historical documents. These early Christian writers are talking about the historical Jesus, right? And we can go through all the historiographical research to say Jesus existed. I can trust the Gospels, all right? We don't have time to do that, but let's say we've done that. We've done our research. This Jesus guy made some claims to be God, okay? I accept that. He rose from the dead, vindicated those claims. Now, we also have to look, Ron, at what Jesus left us. He left us a Christian community. And not just a Christian community where everybody's relative in their Christian thinking of saying, oh, well, I'm going to believe what I think Jesus taught, and you just go ahead and believe what you think Jesus taught. No, Jesus gave us a church, Ron, a Christian community with constituted officials to guide and lead his group of people, his flock. And we see this explicitly in Matthew chapter 16, verses 18 through 19, he constitutes Peter as the visible and central leader of the 12. In Matthew 18, 15 through 17, he talks about when there's a disagreement, you take it to the church, and the church is going to have the final say regarding the matter. We see this played out in Acts chapter 15 at the Council of Jerusalem when there was a theological debate about circumcision. They brought it to the church. They brought it to the church leaders, and the truth was declared. So no such thing as only me and Jesus, but me, Jesus, and his church.
Thank you, Carlo. More Carlo Broussard taking your questions on relativism, what we might call the plague of relativism in the world today. We'll try to clean up our corner of that plague anyways, the part of the world that we can reach. Catholic Answers Live, 888-318-7884 is the number. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Bishop Jeffrey Monfort and Bishop of the Diocese of Steubenville. Make sure you keep it on Catholic Answers Live. God bless you.
It was 100 years ago that our Blessed Mother appeared to three children in Fatima, Portugal, and Catholic Answers Magazine is marking the anniversary with a very special issue. Want to be sure to get your copy? Subscribe right now to the best Catholic apologetics magazine anywhere by calling 888-291-8000 or by going to Catholic.com. Getting Fatima right, exploding the myths of Fatima, and a closer look at our Blessed Mother. Just a few of the articles to look forward to. You don't want to miss this very special issue highlighting this hallmark event in Catholic history. Don't wait another moment to subscribe. Call 888-291-8000 or go to the shop at Catholic.com right now to get subscriptions for yourself and those you love. Share the faith. Defend the faith. Catholic Answers Magazine from Catholic Answers, the most trusted name in Catholic apologetics.
Where can you find the answers to hundreds of the most common questions about the Catholic faith? Catholic Answers 20 Answer Series, that's where. Clear, concise, and easy to carry, the 20 Answer Series from Catholic Answers Press offers hard facts, powerful arguments, and clear explanations of the most important topics facing the Church and the world, all in a compact, easy-to-read package. They're available individually, at special bulk prices, or you can get a starter pack of all 20 at a very special price. And remember, you can now purchase them as ebooks for reading on your mobile devices. Call 1-888-291-8000 or visit the shop at Catholic.com today to get your copies of all the titles in this exciting new series, or ask for them at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. We're taking on relativism this hour. Is there truth? Is there moral truth? Is there none? Is there no such thing as truth? Are we in a world without truth, without morals? 888-318-7884 is the number. I'll just remind you that everyone who gets on the air with Carlo today is going to get a free copy of Carlo's new audio, a CD. I guess that's the only kind of CDs there. Well, maybe that. I don't know. Your Truth, My Truth, How to Understand and Refute Relativistic Thinking. Carlo, before we continue, I do want to ask you about one thing. Be bold. Be Catholic. Calling all men. Don't miss this year's Catholic Men's Conference on March 25th at St. Francis of Assisi Catholic Church. That's in Iowa, and I see your picture on this flyer.
That's right. You see my picture and you see my name, and thanks be to God, I'm so honored and blessed that I'm going to be able to be speaking with John Leonetti, Father Rick Wendell, Dr. Matt Hallback, and others at this awesome men's conference. I tell you what, Si, I just love going to men's conferences. I love attending them. I love speaking at them in order to experience that brotherhood, that fellowship, that energy where the Holy Spirit is present, forming men to become the saints that we're called to be. It's going to be a great experience, and I can't wait to get there. It's going to be so much fun.
Well, it's this Saturday.
That's right.
So if you're in Iowa or near Iowa and you can get there, Saturday, March 25th, registration starts at 7, Mass is at 8:30, and you can find out all about it by going to iowacatholicmensconference.com.
Yeah, my talk's going to be forming men to become defenders of faith. So I'm basically going to issue the challenge to the men present to engage the battle on the intellectual front, and the importance of being protectors and guardians and defenders of the mind, because the mind is the gateway to the heart.
Wow, fantastic. And you know what? Our next caller is from Davenport, Iowa. I don't know, Anonymous, if you will be there with Carlo, but you are on with Carlo. Anonymous from Davenport, Iowa.
Good afternoon. My brother-in-law will be there.
Oh, cool. I could tell as soon as I heard your voice that you're not going to be there.
No, but we'll have the representation.
Beautiful.
I would like to ask you a question. Yesterday, I was having a great, interesting car conversation with my 11-year-old son. I just mentioned that I had to throw away a humorous magazine I had purchased because it turned out there was a bunch of inappropriate material in it. And he said, well, you know, other families don't, they use those words. They speak that way. You know, just because we are Catholic and we do that, that's all families are different. And I helped kind of create this relativism, I think, by, you know, as he was growing up, trying not to, you know, pass judgment on things.
Mm.
And so now I'm wondering if this is actually turning around to, you know, be bad religion, so to speak. Could I have your advice?
Yeah, well, first of all, you know, just Anonymous, just as the church does and just as Jesus teaches us in the Gospels, there's nothing wrong with making a judgment about a particular action, that a particular behavior is inappropriate human behavior. I mean, you do it every day with your 11-year-old son, right? If your 11-year-old son mouths off to you, mama, you're going to have some consequences, right? Okay? So the fact that we make judgments about a behavior and say, hey, that's inappropriate human behavior, there's nothing wrong with that. We have to do that as human beings in order to, as we were mentioning earlier, Cy, function as human beings in society. So if you can communicate to your son that there's a difference between a certain behavior being inappropriate, wrong, immoral, whatever word you want to use, and one's responsibility for that immoral behavior. And this is where upbringing comes in, right? So let's say, for example, your 11-year-old son heard his friend at school say a bad four-letter word, right? Okay. Now, you can say, okay, son, well, that word, it has a certain meaning to it that's really bad. It's not good for us as human beings. It contradicts our human dignity and our value created in the image and likeness of God. Now, so that's bad, and we judge that. We ought not to say that word, given the conventions of our society and the meaning that's attached to it. But whether your friend is responsible for that or not, only God can judge that, because it may very well be that your friend's son was brought up in a home where his parents simply didn't teach him that these words are so bad and violating of our human dignity and keeping us from loving God and loving each other. So notice, Anonymous, there's a distinction to be made between judging a particular action to be wrong and then judging one's responsibility or culpability, as we would say in theology, like whether that person has full knowledge of what they're doing and whether or not it's wrong. Does that help, at least for starters?
It does indeed. Thank you very much.
Okay, fantastic.
Well, don't forget to give your address to the call screener, because you're going to be getting a free copy of Carlo's CD, Your Truth, My Truth.
And Cy, if I may just follow up very quickly, very briefly, you know, in the Gospels, when Jesus talks about do not judge, he's not talking about not judging a particular action to be immoral. Jesus did that left and right throughout his whole ministry. He said to the woman caught in adultery, you know, go and sin no more. That implies that what she was doing was wrong. But the judgment that Jesus says for us not to enact, do not judge, has to do with one's responsibility, one's culpability, judging the one's knowledge or one's consent. Only God has access to that subjective dimension, right? Only God has access to the inner workings of the heart and the soul and in the mind. But we can judge external behaviors and say that's not good for human beings, that is good for human beings, we ought to pursue the good, avoid the evil, etc.
Thank you very much, Anonymous. We go now to Matt in Omaha, Nebraska, listening on KVSS. I think that's our second call today from Omaha, Nebraska. You're very big in Omaha, Carlo. Matt, what's
well,
on
that's
your
a
mind?
Great place.
Thanks, guys. My question is regarding seems like there's kind of a conflict between relativism today and today's scientific, everybody has to have scientific proof for everything.
Yeah.
So how does that kind of play out?
Right, Matt. And, you know, I would agree with you, Matt, that there's it's interesting in modern, in pop culture and modern society, you know, relativism is very prevalent. But yet you still have this push for an intellectual elitism, right, which is reserved for, unfortunately, the scientific community by many non-Christians or atheists who would say, if you are, you know, to belong to the intellectually elite, you have to embrace science only and reject God. And what's interesting is that you do see this tension, Matt, between relativism and this sort of desire for objective truth within the scientific community. And that's something I think is legitimate to point out. However, Matt, it's important to note that very often, when it comes to relativism that would be embraced among those in the scientific community who are looking for objective truth, often it's moral relativism that they embrace, as opposed to the intellectual relativism. So rather than saying there's no truth in general, they're going to reject that because they're seeking truth about the cosmos, right? They're seeking truth about the universe, objective truth. But they often, of course, not all scientists. I'm talking about those scientists who would embrace a moral relativism. They would often say, well, truth is relative when it comes to morality, right? When it comes to how you're going to use your sexual powers, right? When it comes to how you're going to identify as a male or a female, or even in some cases as a cat or a human, or an alien or a human, or 6 years old or 52 years old, as a case in Canada. So I think it's important to make that distinction that those within the scientific community who are seeking objective truth, at least atheists, you could say, not all atheists, but a lot of them out there, would be a relativist when it comes to moral truth, not necessarily truth in general. And that's why, Matt, I made the distinction at the outset of the show between intellectual relativism and moral relativism, because all intellectual relativists are going to be moral relativists, at least in their mental framework. But not all moral relativists are intellectual relativists. So there's a distinction to be made. Is that helpful?
Yes, that is very.
Okay, fantastic.
Thank you very much, Matt. Appreciate that call. Michael in San Antonio, Texas, listening on Guadalupe Radio. You are on with Carlo Broussard.
How you doing, Carlo? Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome, Michael.
Yeah, the question I have is I was in a debate, I guess, with a family member,
yeah.
And they're like, oh, how dare you Christians say that you guys have the right way and there's only one, or that other religions are wrong.
Right.
So I decided to use the principle of non-contradiction. I was like, well, Jews don't believe Jesus is God. Christians believe Jesus is God. I said, Jesus cannot be God and not God at the same time.
There you go.
And, yeah, and so he was just like, oh, I was like, is that possible? He's like, yeah. And I was like, okay.
Right.
I'm like, I'm at a loss now because you just blew lots and you're ignoring logic. He's kind of influenced by Eastern religions that say there's a duality and a singularity at the same time. So.
Okay. All right, yeah, well, fundamentally, Michael, there are times, my friend, when you come to an impasse in a discussion where there's no more you can do. If one is willing to doubt the fundamental principle of reason, of the principle of non-contradiction, well, they're undermining their very reasoning capacities itself. Now, if you want to take a shot at it, Michael, you can show the logical absurdity itself of denying the principle of non-contradiction. It gets a little bit heady. It might be a little difficult to grasp on the spot, but you can give it a shot. And this is something that I deal with in my study guide for my talk, Your Truth, My Truth, which you're going to get a free copy of in one of the last chapters. I teach you how to show the absurdity of denying the principle, because here's the key, Michael. In the very denial of the principle, You have to you presuppose the principle. So, for example, let's say I want to say the principle of non-contradiction is false, that something could be and not be in the same respect, the same place and time. Well, if I make that assertion, Michael, I have to intend to express the meaning of the statement and not the opposite. What is the opposite? The principle's true. But I don't want to affirm that because I'd be undermining my initial denial, right? So if I must intend to express the meaning of my argument, of my statement, the principle's false, and not the opposite, well, notice I presuppose the truth of the principle, that something cannot be and not be in the same respect, the same place and time. So the point being is that in order to deny the principle of non-contradiction, Michael, you have to assume it. You have to assume its truth. So fundamentally, it's incoherent. This is why we call it a self-evident principle of reason. You can't demonstrate its truth because there's no prior knowledge that you can rely on in order to come to the conclusion that it's true. All you can do is defend it by showing the incoherence of its denial. And I teach you that in the study guide, Michael, that you're going to get if you leave your address and phone number to our call screener.
Thank you very much, Michael. I hope that that was helpful. We got to take a quick break and we'll be back with more Carlo Broussard answering your questions on relativism right here on Catholic Answers Live.
Hi, this is Bishop James Wall from the Diocese of Gallup, New Mexico. Keep it right here on Catholic Answers Live.
Howdy, folks. This is Jimmy Akin, and I have exciting news. Starting this spring, Catholic Answers will begin airing its first ever television program. It'll be appearing on EWTN, and you'll also be able to watch it, no matter where you are, from Catholic.com using your smart TV, tablet, or other device. Catholic Answers' mission is to use every means we can to reach people with the message of Christ and His Church. But until now, television has been beyond our reach. That's about to change, and that's why we need your help right now. Producing a quality, professional television show like this is not cheap, and it can only happen with the generous support of donors like you. To make your donation, visit Catholic.com and click the Catholic Answers television banner, or call us toll-free at 888-291-8000. That's the Catholic Answers television banner at Catholic.com, or call toll-free 888-291-8000.
A lot of people think that street evangelization involves yelling out of a bullhorn telling people that they're going to hell. Not so with St. Paul's Street Evangelization. Our methods are non-confrontational and effective. We simply offer information on the Catholic faith, along with rosaries, miraculous medals, and prayer. Pope Francis wrote about how beautiful it is to see street preachers joyfully bringing Jesus to every corner of the earth. Street evangelization is fun and fruitful. Join us today at streetevangelization.com.
It was 100 years ago that our Blessed Mother appeared to three children in Fatima, Portugal, and Catholic Answers Magazine is marking the anniversary with a very special issue. Want to be sure to get your copy? Subscribe right now to the best Catholic apologetics magazine anywhere by calling 888-291-8000 or by going to Catholic.com. Getting Fatima right, exploding the myths of Fatima, and a closer look at our Blessed Mother. Just a few of the articles to look forward to. You don't want to miss this very special issue highlighting this hallmark event in Catholic history. Don't wait another moment to subscribe. Call 888-291-8000 or go to the shop at Catholic.com right now to get subscriptions for yourself and those you love. Share the faith. Defend the faith. Catholic Answers Magazine from Catholic Answers, the most trusted name in Catholic apologetics.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Carlo Broussard, staff apologist at Catholic Answers, is our guest this hour. His CD, Your Truth, My Truth, How to Understand and Refute Relativistic Thinking. And that's what we're talking about, relativism, this hour on Catholic Answers Live. We go to Bernadine in Las Vegas, Nevada, listening on Immaculate Heart Radio. Bernadine, what's your question for Carlo? Bernadine. I'm sorry, Bernadine. I didn't put you on the air. I messed up. Oh. So start over again, Bernadine. That was my fault.
No problem. Hi, guys.
Hi.
My question is, When did this all come about? I mean,
right.
Was it in the time of Socrates?
Mm.
When did this all start?
Yeah, well, actually, you find elements of the idea of relativism in the pre-Socratic philosophers, such as Heraclitus, who is a pre-Socratic philosopher, died around 475 BC. And he taught that basically because cultures differ in their beliefs and their opinions, that there is no absolute truth because of all of these different beliefs, which is a common argument that's put forth by relativists even today. And even Protagoras, another pre-Socratic philosopher who died about 412 BC, he taught that man is the measure of all things, right? And that the measure of reality and what is real is an individual's opinion. So we see relativism dating all the way back to the pre-Socratic philosophers, and basically the ancient philosophers such as Plato and Aristotle are responding to these pre-Socratic philosophers in order to show the objectivity of reality, that there is objective truth. Plato would talk about the forms, which he taught exist in a third realm, these universals that are objectively true, and everything else is measured against those forms. Aristotle would teach a different view of the forms. Forms do exist, but Aristotle would teach that the forms exist in the things themselves as well as in the intellect once we abstract the form, as we come to know things. He denied Plato's idea of the forms existing in a third realm. Now, Thomas Aquinas, in the medieval times, in the Middle Ages, the 13th century, Thomas Aquinas would follow suit from Aristotle and teach that forms do exist in the things themselves and in the mind as we abstract the form, as we come to know it. When I talk about form, I'm talking about like dogness, right? I see Fido, hey, that's a dog. Dogness, the essence of a dog, exists in that dog Fido, but it also exists in my mind so that I can go and look at Cujo or Feed Jake, right? You remember the country song, Feed Jake? Anyway.
No, you're way out in the weeds now.
That's right. I know, man. But in order to apply that form to another dog. Now, Thomas Aquinas would say that these forms ultimately exist in God's divine intellect, the archetypes, right, by which everything is measured. Now, in modern times, Bernardine, we see it arising in Immanuel Kant, a German philosopher, and let me see if I can get this right, 18th century German philosopher. I'm going to have to check on that. And what he taught was what he called, Bernardine, these categories of understanding. Now, bottom line is, Bernardine, he taught rather than the mind conforming to reality, reality actually conforms to the mind. We actually structure our sensuous perceptions, things that we perceive through our senses, and we actually construct the real. Now, he wasn't a relativist, but in the sense that we determine reality because he believed these categories of understanding, this power of the mind to take what we experience and make it into what is real, belong to all human beings. But fundamentally, what he taught was the essence of relativism. The mind doesn't conform to reality, but reality conforms to the mind. And that's what we find in modernity, in modern-day relativism, that we have to ultimately critique and say it's self-defeating and show the logical absurdities and how it ultimately leads to the undermining of society and civilization itself.
What, does that help you, Bernardine?
Tremendously. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Bernardine.
You're welcome.
Appreciate that. Now, Carlo, if I could just push you. I've always thought of Pontius Pilate as the ultimate relativist because of his question, what is truth?
And I mean, you could follow that line of thought. What is truth? I'm sure he asked that question in sort of a snarky way, you know? And ultimately, that's the question that is asked today. If it's asked in a snarky way, what is truth, implying that there really is no truth, or if there is a truth, we can't come to know it, which would be different than relativism. It would be an intellectual skepticism, mm-hmm. right? And then we can critique that. But, Cy, it's important to point out that even as absolutists, we want to ask the question, what is truth? Because that's the fundamental drive as a human being. As Aristotle said, every man desires to know. And with that desire to know, comes the question, what is truth? What is real?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the impetus to set out upon the journey to find out what is true.
Carlo Broussard, our guest this hour, TC in Portland, Oregon, listening on Immaculate Heart Radio. You are on with Carlo. What's your question?
Hi, thank you. Hopefully I can say this concisely. When I bring up abortion with people who are for abortion as a choice, usually what they'll say is that, you know, I wouldn't make that choice, but that's for somebody else to make.
Right.
And, but at the same time, it's not quite a true relativist because they'd also say you can't kill someone because that's against the law.
Okay.
You know, who's like your child or something. So how do you deal with people whose beliefs are partially relativist?
Right.
Partially going by the law, or it's not like you can't completely dispute it.
Sure.
By saying you're a relativist because they pick and choose.
Right. Well, in these TC, right? Did I get that correct?
TC, yes.
Okay.
It is.
Well, what you have to do is you have to take these issues one by one. So if they're just a relativist in one particular issue, for example, you brought up the case of abortion, well, then you could use the tactic of trying to find their logic, right? Find the logic that's embedded in their argument and then extract it and apply it to other situations where they would see it would be absurd. So for in the case of they believe it's the woman's choice to terminate the pregnancy, to have an abortion. Well, then you have to probe and begin asking the questions, well, okay, what are they choosing? Yes, they're choosing. And right off the bat, a half-truth there is we agree that it's a good thing to choose to have human freedom. This is a great gift, namely free will, that God has created us with. However, the other half of the argument that's not true is notice that the individual, the woman, is choosing something that's not good. So the whole argument assumes that what the woman is choosing is a good. And that, TC, is that's where the debate lies. That's what we have to press on. That's what we have to challenge. Is this choice what the woman is choosing? We'd say in moral philosophy, the object, right, that the woman is choosing, the object of the act, is that a good? What is she choosing? She's choosing to kill an innocent human being. Is that a good thing that we ought to choose? The answer is no. Therefore, that woman ought not to choose that bad thing, right? That thing that's not good, not only for the human being whose life she's bringing to an end, but also for her, because she's making an act that violates the dignity of human beings, which is going to harm her herself. We can talk about the psychological and emotional problems that result, but ultimately harming one's character because you're taking the life of an innocent human being. So in conclusion, TC, I would say that you have to take it issue by issue and try to identify what's good about it, we want to choose, but then what's bad about it, namely what the individual is choosing. And if it's not good, well, then it's not good for all human beings, right? So I don't want to choose to take the life of an innocent human being because taking the life of an innocent human being is not good. That's bad. That's immoral, which is also going to apply to every other human being as well. Why? Because we're all human, you see? Is that helpful for you?
That's very helpful. Thank you.
Okay, TC. Thank you.
Thank you, TC. Appreciate that. Carlo, I want to just remind folks that you're going to be in Iowa this weekend at the men's conference Saturday,
yes.
March 25th. You'll be at the conference. And I also would like to remind people that you can, even if you didn't get on the air with Carlo today, get his CD, Your Truth, My Truth, How to Understand and Refute Relativistic Thinking, along with a 38-page study guide. You just go to shop.catholic.com,
yeah.
and it's less than $10 there.
Amen.
I like the less than $10. I don't know.
That's
how much,
a good
but,
deal.
Yeah.
I don't know how we survive here with such cheap prices on our products.
I know. It's less than a sandwich. Everything is based on sandwiches in my financial calculations. Well, how many sandwiches would that be?
Sorry, that implies you eat a lot of sandwiches.
Look at me, Carlo. Just take a look. Thank you so much, Carlo Broussard. Next hour coming up, can you share your faith with Charity, Calm, and Joy? Brandon Vaught. from Bishop Robert Barron's Word on Fire. Catholic Ministries will be here to help you do just that. So get on the line if you got a question for Brandon, 888-318-7884. See you right after this.